Welcome back to Forbidden Knowledge News. I'm your host, Chris Matthew, and tonight I'd like to welcome former Vice President of the Hawaii Remote Viewers Guild and one of the foremost remote viewers in the world. His website is cryptoviewing.com and cryptoviewing on YouTube, Dick Algar. How you doing tonight, Dick?
Hi, Chris. Nice to talk with you. Aloha from Hawaii.
Very good. How's the weather out there?
Weather is always beautiful. Trade winds are blowing. It's always like just about 80, 85 degrees. Perfect.
Yeah, that's what I hear. It's always nice. Now, I thought to start out tonight, it's the first time on the program. So go ahead and just give us a bit about your background and what got you started doing remote viewing.
Well, my background is actually part of the entire journey that that got me to where I am now. And it's a very interesting story. And where I'd like to take this, and we'll go back to how I got started. But it began about 25, 30 years ago, where I started investigating things. And I started with diet, American diet, and learned about that and had a mentor that helped me learn the truth about what actually the FDA advises you should eat actually causes early disease and death. And that was my first introduction to the fact that, oh, what the authorities tell us really might not be true. So having grabbed that thread and chased it, I then heard about remote viewing. And remote viewing took me down a whole other rabbit hole where I had probably my first most important mentor, which was the man that taught me remote viewing for 19 years. And that opened me up to the fact that science and history have been kept for us. And what we're told about science and history are just mostly not true.
And your trainer was a retired special forces, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And we'll go back to that. So then I got to the point where my next mentor came into my life, who is teaching me the truth about the administration of the world and where that's going and how that works and how that leads to cryptocurrency. So that was a 20-year journey, and we could do hours on any of that. If you want to start with remote viewing, we'll go back. Here I was in 1995, a television newscaster here in Hawaii. Mainstream buttoned-up guy, wore a suit and tie to work and told the news as told by mainstream media. I was your mainstream news anchor, Dick Algar, reporting. I covered presidents and prime ministers and met governors and senators and murderers. I interviewed Ted Bundy. I went to fires and murders and Easter egg hunts, covered it all for 30 years. I was driving to work one day, and you're a little bit young, but are you familiar with Art Bell?
Oh, definitely. Love Art Bell.
Art Bell, back in the day, was on the news radio station here in Hawaii. So I would drive in my car from the other side of the island to work at 2:30 in the afternoon to anchor the news. And on the way over, I would have news radio on to hear the updated headlines. This was before the internet. Back in those days, you couldn't just click on your computer and find the news. You had to tune into a news broadcast or listen to news radio. Information wasn't readily available. So just to get up to date before starting my work, I would listen to the news radio as I drove to work. Well, on that station, when I got off work at 11 at night, was something called Coast to Coast with Art Bell. And so I'd be driving home after a day of doing the news, after the 10 o'clock news, take off my necktie and be driving home over the beautiful mountain pass in Hawaii. And I heard this rich voice of Art Bell with the most far out information. And I kind of got hooked on that. And so because of the Art Bell Show, I heard about remote viewing. Back in 95, Chris, remote viewing was new to people. People hadn't heard about that. There were no examples of remote viewing. It was a term that we heard about on Art Bell, and he had guests. And there was no YouTube where people were presenting remote viewing. It was this deep, dark, mysterious thing. And so I took a class from Courtney Brown at the Farsight Institute. I flew to Atlanta and took a one-week class because I thought, if this is true, this is the most remarkable thing that a human being could achieve. This would change everything. And so I spent the money, time, and energy to go take a class. What's your experience with remote viewing? How did you hear about it? I mean, you're more of an internet generation where you've been able.
Well, I've been studying alternative, conspiracy culture for quite a few years, and I came across remote viewing a couple of years ago, and it was actually a couple of Courtney Brown's videos, and you were, of course, there. And after that, I was fascinated, and I ended up watching a few more of the videos from the Farsight Institute. And I mean, you are actually the first remote viewer I've had on my show. So this is going to be really great.
Okay, so Courtney Brown had a famous book that came out in 97 it came out. Remote viewing was declassified and put into the public domain in 95. There was a famous show, Ted Koppel, ABC News Nightline. And one November night in 95, he came on and said, "The U.S. government, CIA, has used a form of psychic spying known as remote viewing and spent $20 million, and they broke the story. And that's where it came into the public consciousness. That was done on purpose, by the way. That was a controlled release, of course. And so Courtney came out with his book. David Morehouse came out with a book. Ed Dames was very popular at the time. And remote viewing was the new darling of the late night talk show circuit. And everybody wanted to know about that. And they were giving classes and giving their findings and writing books. And so I jumped into it and went to Courtney Brown's Farsight Institute. Had a good time. You can't learn remote viewing in 1 week. It's not possible. But you can get an introduction to it. And I got a good introduction. So I came back to Hawaii after my 1 week at Farsight, and I was all fired up about remote viewing. And there I met up with another guy who had preceded me at Farsight here in Hawaii, and we did some work together, talked about it. And I got on an email list where somebody sent me an email and said, "There's a retired military guy in Hawaii that might start teaching. He's going to give a free lecture next week at this location." And it wasn't Ed Dames. Military remote viewing at that time was either Ed Dames, Paul Smith, Lynn Buchanan, Joe McMonagle, David Morehouse, and a few others. So I went to this free lecture. And this was the man who ended up teaching me, Glenn Wheaton, who was retired U.S. Army Special Forces. And you knew he was legitimate the minute he stepped up and started talking. His bearing, his manner of speaking, the information that he was giving. And how he came about teaching that was... Well, I'll give you this is an interesting story, how he got involved in remote viewing. He worked at a top secret base in the 1970s in Augsburg, Germany. He was a Morse code intercept operator. So he would sit there with headphones on at a little station with dim lights, listening to beep, 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 dot, dots, and dits and dashes from behind the Iron Curtain. And he would transcribe them. They were listening to the Soviets. So one night he was working the night shift, and he had been at Oktoberfest in Germany and had a couple of beers during the day, some good food, and was supposed to take a nap, and he didn't take his nap. So he reported to work after a few beers during the day, a little bit fatigued, and was leaning back listening to this Morse code, and the guy receiving the code in Vladivostok wasn't too good at Morse code. And he didn't copy the message, but Glenn had already copied it. And so the guy in Vladivostok said, "Oh, please send again." So Glenn, "Oh God, this guy's terrible." And he's listening, and there's something about those tones that beep, 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 that alters your brain waves. And the Army knew this. As he was listening to the code, it put him into an altered state where he was just falling asleep. And as he was falling asleep, he saw the Russian guy in the uniform tapping the code. He had a bilocation experience. And his supervisor came and kicked his chair and said, "Wheaton, wake the F up." And he was like, falling asleep in the military is not good.
Right.
And he blurted out like, "Oh, sir, I saw the Russian." "Like, what?" He said, "I saw the guy sending the code. I just saw him." And they said, "Oh, no, 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 no. Give me your badge. Get out of here. You're, you know," they looked at like, what if the guy says this? Well, they sent him to psychological review, and he was like, "Oh, I'm in trouble. Shouldn't have said that. Oh man, I'm in trouble." Well, it turned out they were looking for people that could do this because they knew about it. And so they sent him through this whole other program. And next time he went to work, they said, "Come into the secret room." So he did that for 20 years, and it was true, and he could do it, and they did it. And what they used it for, I can't really talk about. He didn't talk much about it. He's still classified.
Right. And you said something interesting earlier. You said that they kind of intentionally released this information about remote viewing through the media. Why do you think that is?
Well, because it's a very powerful technology. The fact that all humans can do this. All right, Chris, you have had moments where you know something you shouldn't know. It's like a friend you haven't talked to for 5 years, you suddenly think of them and they call you. And you go, "I was just thinking of them." Or you wake up thinking, "You know, we haven't had a 9/11 event where everybody's watching the same news story all on a worldwide level in a few years. I wonder when that's going to happen." And then Notre Dame burns. You've had moments like that, haven't you? Everybody's had them.
Definitely, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And you brush it off as coincidence or blind luck or just something you can't explain. The truth is, all humans have this ability. We all exist with a subconscious awareness that is in a realm where consciousness is a dimension, time and space fall out of the equation, and all knowledge is there. Your human brain acts as a filter because you can't, if you were getting all this information all the time, and I think sometimes schizophrenics do, you would be just stark raving, barking mad to have all this coming in. So the long story short is the people who run this place don't want us to know that. That's one of the bit, your show is called what? Forbidden Knowledge?
Forbidden Knowledge News.
Forbidden Knowledge. That's knowledge they don't want us to know. When they knew that remote viewing was going to come out, some people were writing books. Or it may have been time for it intentionally to come out. They decided that they would release it on their own terms, and they would release a watered down version of it that wouldn't do too much harm. They decided to keep it in the realm of the New Age community. Like, "Oh, let's look at UFO theories and let's keep it in the woo-woo realm," so that And they released a version that kind of sort of works, but not the real, the full version. It's like when you download a trial of a program and it doesn't have all the features that do all the things that the pay one does. So they released a version that wouldn't do too much harm.
So they admitted to doing this in the past. Do you think that the military still uses remote viewing for certain applications?
Not just the military, other entities, other government entities, other supra government entities. I know I'm a pretty good remote viewer. I've worked hard at it, and I was given a very good methodology. There are remote viewers that just would put me to shame. There are remote viewers that would absolutely blow your mind how good they are. So in terms of knowing whether or not it's still being used by military, my teacher put it this way, and this was 10 years ago. He said, I know there are people that have the skill that are still in the business, in the military, and I believe they're still using it. So why wouldn't they?
Exactly. And it seems like, you know, especially with the military industrial complex, they'd have ways to enhance it or, you know, use some kind of, you know, drugs or something to make it enhanced in these, in their remote viewers.
That's a very astute point. That's very, very good. You brought that up. Yes. That's still secret. My teacher wouldn't tell me. I asked him straight out time and time again, and he would not just decline to answer. He would change the subject completely. It would be like, hey, Glenn, what's the free, you know, what's the enhancement? I mean, how do they, he goes, oh, the Dodgers. Did you see that guy was pitching really good today? Just absolutely changed the subject. There is biofeedback and electronic tones, something to do with biofeedback and tones that will help you remote view better. But I don't know what it is. If I could find it out on my own, I think it would be okay, but it would be illegal for someone to disclose that to me.
What about natural psychic ability? Do you think that would enhance remote viewing?
Well, yeah. Natural psychic ability and remote viewing come from the same place. It's a communication skill. It's you leaking information. What natural psych does is they're wired a little differently. So you and I and a psychic, we all have a subconscious awareness. Okay, that's in this other dimension, other realm. And it communicates with us on some level, a gut feeling or a hunch. Psychics are wired in such a way that it leaks through naturally. They just have a I don't want to say channel, but a conduit. Something about their wiring allows this to come through. It comes from the same place. It's still natural. It's the same source. It's the same information pathway. It's just open a little bit more with psychics. With remote viewers, we're trained how to, on demand, open that communication pathway and establish and maintain that communication pathway. So for us, it's on demand. For psychics, it's more like, oh, the pond overflows and the water rushes in. For a psychic, they go dig a ditch and get the water to come in. And for you, it happens naturally and subtly. You don't understand it and you dismiss it. Most people let me ask you a question. Have you ever tried to do, let's say, I don't have one. Oh. No, I don't have one. Let's say that I write down target ID. A1, B2, C3, D4. And I in an envelope, I have a picture of a location, a person, an event, an object, something that represents that target ID. Do you think you could close your eyes and just for an instant see that, or just for an instant know anything about that? Have you ever tried that?
No, I have never tried that. And I've
most people haven't, and they're surprised when you give them a class and you give them 30 minutes of instruction and have them try it, because they go, oh, how the hell did that work?
And that's what I was just about to ask you about, is the process, because I've heard it explained a couple of times by different people, but it's still kind of hard for me to grasp how, you know, you can just close your eyes with a set of coordinates and, you know, it'll bring you there. So just tell us a little bit about how the process works.
Well, keep in mind, this is the method that I was trained that was developed by U.S. Army Special Forces. A lot of the methods of so-called remote viewing that are popular today, they never close their eyes. They tell you there's no visuals involved. They don't see anything. They just get ideas about it. So they will tell you that, oh, remote viewing is a misnomer. It's not really viewing. It's just getting some low-level ideas. What I was trained is the first thing you do is close your eyes and look. And there's a way to look. There's a way to orient your eyes. There, you can only look for a certain length of time. There's a structure to it. It's very precise. It's very intricate. It's very detailed, and it's. Psychics find it a little cumbersome. What it is it's training your subconscious to make the visuals happen in a place where you command it to happen. There's a long feedback curve. Just in the first few months, we did 40, 80, 100 targets where we would have a picture of something in an envelope. And we would look for that long and just try to see the general shape, an outline, is it round or is it angular? At the very beginning, that's the limit of what you can get. But by practice, and keep opening that aperture further, you can get to where you can actually see it and have it be experiential. And I can't really teach it right now. It would be too detailed to do, but yeah, there is a very systematic structure to doing it.
Now, how vivid are the images that you would get? Is it kind of like a dreamlike image, or is it something different? Are you able to describe?
Yeah, that's a good question. It can be a wide range. Oh, okay, you just hung up for a second. We're on. It can be a wide range. It can be an idea. It can be a feeling. It can be a smear of a suggestive shape in the blackness. It can be a faint outline. It can be like when you wake up in the middle of the night in a dark room and you look across the room and you can barely see this, you know, something in the closet, like, what is that? It can also be as real and detailed as I'm seeing your face on the screen right now and you're seeing mine. The first time I ever remote viewed, and this took me about 6 months, I was working a target, and it took me about 40 minutes to get in the proper place, all the preliminary steps. And then I had my eyes closed. I was doing a breathing exercise. And I kind of went out, and it was like a little dream happened, like a little flickering movie. Like suddenly I was looking through the lens of a surveillance camera, like a bad surveillance camera. And I saw a man walking through a department store in a gray coat. And there was a row of suits, and he touched one. And then he looked over here, and there were men's shirts folded up in cellophane and neatly stacked. And then he walked by, and then all of a sudden I was aware of sitting at my desk. And I thought, that was a weird experience. What was that little dream I just had? Was that remote viewing? And I drew that. I was blind to the target. I had no idea what the target was. I thought, if that was a guy shopping. And so I later got the feedback, and the target was, it was a beaconing target. It was someone who had, he said, I went to a military PX in Germany on the second floor. It was a men's style clothing store. And I walked through that, and I went, my hair stood up. It chills down. I said, I saw it. So yeah, that is possible. And it can be quite visual. Let's show that one I did.
Yeah, that's what I was just about to say. You sent me
Notre Dame
earlier.
Okay, while you're setting that up, I'll tell the story.
Yeah, let me.
For crypto viewing, and if people want to see more of my work, they can go to cryptoviewing.com or YouTube channel, Crypto Viewing. Each month, we try to do predictions where we try to see what the top news story will be the following month. And 2 months ago, click on that picture, I was in my little state and I saw white smoke coming off of a building in a city. And I had the realization that, and I said this was February, it would be within the next 90 days, that there would be an event where the whole world would watch a building burn. And I didn't know what building it was or why it was so important. It was a fire with white smoke, but I knew it would be very important. And we published that. So when I saw that, I had like a 1, 2, 3, 4 second, like looking through a bad lens with some Vaseline smeared on the lens, not quite in focus, not quite completely clear, but enough to understand what it was. So I drew that and published it. And when I saw the news last week that Notre Dame had burned, I went, yeah, that's what I saw. So that's what I drew. And we published in February for February, saying in the next 90 days, there will be a white smoke fire event in a city, a building, and it will get worldwide attention. It will be the top news story of the month, if not the year. And so then show the picture of, and that's, I saw it so quickly, I didn't get it exactly right, but yeah.
No, it's pretty close. I mean, you can see that, you know, from what you drew, that, you know, you can see that it could be confused with buildings at the time you're seeing it, but
yeah.
You know, it's pretty pretty amazing.
Well, if you want to know where I'm kicking myself, if you go back to my sketch, see the spire right there?
Yeah.
Let me go. Okay. Back. I had it from a different angle. Okay, over here on the far right, I started to draw the spire and I didn't finish it. I go, wow, there's like a tower. And I just thought, no, I'm making that up. But on the far right, I drew part of the spire. Well, actually, that's the spire after it fell. But I didn't have a sense of the spire. So, yeah, that's how it comes across, spooky stuff.
Yeah, that's pretty compelling. And, I mean, it's such a large-scale event. I mean, do you find that, you know, large-scale events like that have an effect on the collective consciousness of, you know, basically everyone?
Oh, yeah. They've proved that like, when Princess Diana died, when Princess Di died, when 9/11 happened, there were random number generators throughout the world that gauged the consciousness. You can, like they said in Star Wars, there's a disturbance in the Force.
Right.
Because we are one big consciousness. Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. And you hear a lot of stories about that, especially with like 9/11, how I believe there was a recent computer program that read a spike in a certain algorithm that occurred a few hours before the 9/11. Have you heard about that?
Yeah, that was the random number generator that spiked up. Well, I'll tell you our 9/11 story. We used to have a remote viewing class where we would have 12 remote viewers who were studying and training and working together. And on Monday, September 10th, 2001, we had a class and we did a practice target. The target for which we were tasked was a photograph of Timothy Leary in a flotation tank. You know what a flotation tank? It's a sensory deprivation tank.
Right, yeah.
So the proper remote viewing would be a man in an enclosed space floating in water having far out things. Nobody drew that. We went, oh, we missed the target. Everybody had all this wild data. And so we chalked that up as a failure and went home. And the next morning, the planes hit the towers and the towers collapsed. Well, we went back several weeks ago and someone was filing our work and looked at what we had drawn. And I had drawn a plane hitting a tower. We drew smoke and fire. We described the 9/11 event, we remote viewers, hours before it happened. We had the whole event. So we slipped in time there, and that happens. So we missed, you know, it's like we went into that realm of consciousness where the information is, and we were being directed to Timothy Leary in a flotation tank, but everybody's subconscious said, no, look over here, look at this big event. So they reported data on that. So yeah, that's a true story.
That's amazing. And that just brings a question of, you know, how we perceive time. It's, you know, it's not linear like we perceive it. What are your thoughts on, you know, the construct of time and how it relates to remote viewing?
That's a tough one to describe in this dimension. I think what, I think the future, and we're pretty much able to see things about 90 days out, that in this dimension of our universe, this reality, what's going to happen in the future is a forming wave. Like I go surfing in Hawaii and I can sit of a 500 yard or a couple hundred yards offshore, 100 yards offshore, and I can see a swell coming. And I know that that's going to break as a wave right over here. I can paddle to the spot where that's going to break so I can ride it. Time is kind of like that. Time is the culmination of these forming fields of possibilities that coalesce into the now. There's another aspect to that. If you can displace your awareness into the future, then you can look back and see what happens in time. Or it's like consciousness. Time is a dimension. Consciousness is a dimension, and they're overlapping. You can displace your awareness to a different place in time and space. It's like when you look at a YouTube video and you have the scrubber bar, the cursor, you can move it ahead and back and replay things. So we can move our consciousness about in the dimension of time and space. It's hard to put into words. It's hard to describe, because if you go to a different dimension in a different plane, you can see it all. And it's like not apparent to us here. And it confounds us. It still confounds us here on this level of reality. But I'll just tell you this. When you get into remote viewing and you do like see Notre Dame burn, it's spooky. It's like,
yeah, I can imagine. Yeah. Now, what about the possibilities of interacting with a target? Is that possible to interact with something you're remote viewing?
You have good questions. That's a smart question. It took me, when I was getting my remote viewing training, it was about 10 years before we brought that up. So my teacher said to us, okay, you guys have proved you can remote view. You can do that. You can go forward, you can go backwards. And he gave us a class and said, how does remote viewing work? What happens? And what the conclusion was, is that information moves. In order to remote view, information has to move. All right. If I see Notre Dame burn in Hawaii in February, and I'm seeing Notre Dame in Paris burn in April, that information has to move from Paris to where I am in Hawaii from April 1st or whatever, April, what was that, the whatever, 11th or 12th, whatever day it was, to information moves. If I go remote view a Civil War battlefield and get the blood and gore and the emotion and the death and the bombs going off and smell the gunpowder, information has to move. For that information to be in my head, information has to move. So if I can go to a Civil War battlefield and retrieve information about that, and I have, then is it possible for me in the here and now to displace a part of myself back to the Civil War battlefield and put information there? And we were doing experiments on that. It's very difficult because you don't have much oomph, much power with your subconscious awareness on a target. Like, if I was behind you in your room right now, even physically, like, how could I get you to tickle your nose on camera without holding a feather to your nose? I mean, could I wish it? Could I will it? Could I go behind you and go like this until you picked up on that? Like, that's the problem. How do you impart that information to the past? We did some experiments on that, and theoretically it should be possible. If you can go to the, well, first of all, we believe that a remote viewer actually goes to the event in their own in its own time. You're not just getting an imprint or an impression or some cosmic Akashic record. We believe that you're displacing a part of your conscious awareness to the place. So theoretically, yeah, it should be possible. How to do it? That gets into something called remote influencing. Easier said than done, Chris. Easier said than done. Many will claim they can do it. It's difficult.
That's fascinating. And have you ever come across any cases that have actually claimed to do that, or any remote viewers?
We did an experiment at the Hawaii Remote Viewers Guild where our instructor, Glenn, wanted to give a demonstration. And he said, pick a target for me. Pick a target that will give me an anchor into the past that will put my consciousness in the past. So we selected one. We didn't tell him what it was. The target was, eerily enough, I was just talking about the Civil War. It was a Civil War target. It was Matthew Brady, a famous Civil War photographer who documented battlefields in the early days of photography. And so we watched him do his session blind. We sat there and I recorded it. I have a recording of this. And there's a presentation on this at the IRVA, International Remote Viewing Association. If you Google IRVA message to the past, we recorded Glenn at a whiteboard saying, there's a wagon that has a strap, it rattles, it's full of chemicals, there's someone who goes and documents things, he wears old clothes. And Glenn drew Matthew Brady and said, He liked to document things as was he was in the Civil War. He gave us an hour dissertation on the life of Matthew Brady while we sat there with our mouths open, because he couldn't have known it any other way. He told us things about Matthew Brady's past that we had to go research for days to validate that we didn't know. And one night I was working at the TV station and Glenn called me and said, I need to talk to you right now. I said, I have to do the news. He said, well, afterwards, come over. He was very agitated. I went to his house and he had a picture of Matthew Brady on his computer screen. He said, that's the guy. That's the guy you gave me. And I said, yeah, he'd figured it out. And he said, okay, I've been working on this. He went to the time when Matthew Brady was having his picture taken. And back in those early days of photography, the exposure was like 20 seconds. They would poof, and the people would have to sit there. That's why they all sat there without smiling, because you can't hold a smile for 20 seconds. They would look like this, freeze for 20 seconds. Right. And there was Matthew Brady with his sitting there like this. My teacher went there to the time when that picture was being taken. And he tried to put a message in the picture. So the message that he selected was heads or tails, because there was a famous experiment done at a research lab for psychic research where they tried to get people to determine whether it would be heads or tails. So he flipped heads. So he wrote heads, GW, his initials, Glenn Wheaton. So he went there and tried to get that to appear in the picture. And we went to the picture of, this is very detailed, convoluted, and confusing. There's a photograph of Matthew Brady that's been in the Library of Congress since 1875. No one's had access to it. We looked at that and we found on his forehead in the emulsion of the photography of the prints of the time, there were little streaks and hazes and cracking, and some of them formed into a heads GW. Wow. And I did a presentation on that, and it's in the Chris, this is the spookiest part. We were poring over that picture. We went to the Library of Congress and we downloaded it and we were blowing it up, looking at it by pixel, and we started seeing other people in his eyes, like reflected in his eyes. I saw my teacher. I saw my own image there that we saw, like there was one we called the man at 11 o'clock on a certain part of his eye. It was like people are going and looking at that and leaving their own imprints. Now, was that, if it was there, it was always there. Like we went back in time and we changed it. So that's the kind of spooky stuff that we play with.
Wow.
Very, very interesting.
Yeah.
I've had a very interesting 20 years in remote viewing.
That is fascinating.
Yeah.
Now we've got a few more minutes left. I want to switch gears for the last few minutes we have. Let's talk about crypto viewing. What got you started doing this?
Okay. I need to turn a fan on here. It's hot in Hawaii. I hope that's not making noise.
But you're good.
I did a segment on Adolf Hitler for Courtney Brown. I remote viewed Adolf Hitler without knowing it was Adolf Hitler. And I saw an old man. I didn't know who it was. I said, there's this man and he's giving a speech and people adore him. Man, they're under his spell. He's like a politician that's the most powerful speaker I've ever heard. And then I said, I see somebody got shot, but it was a play acting, but the guy really died. I didn't understand that. And then I said, I see this old man that's on his deathbed and he has tremendous regrets about what he did to his country and what happened to his country. And then I said, there was somebody buried anonymously and I drew a cemetery where this, where somebody had an anonymous burial. Someone contacted me because of that, that said, Dick, you did a good job on that. We know someone who's seen the cemetery where Hitler was buried in South America. You were right. We could employ you to do some remote viewing for some people. They would pay you a lot of money. And I said, no, I don't do it for money, and I don't know you, and I don't want to, I don't want to get involved in that. So I said, no, thanks. And so that person started, it began the seduction of Dick Allgaier. Like, he, this is a person, Chris, who, you talk about forbidden knowledge. I know a person that has been provided all the forbidden knowledge. There are people who are taught in schools that the rest of us don't get. There are people educated in the real history, the real science.
Oh, yeah, mystery schools, definitely.
Yeah, yeah. So this guy started giving me lessons, and he didn't teach me any forbidden knowledge. He taught me knowledge that is available on the internet. There's a lot of things, if you know where to look and know how to put the puzzle together, he started showing me how to fit the puzzle pieces together from published data. And I've had 2 years of conversation. This is my second mentor. My first big mentor was Glenn, who taught me remote viewing. And my second mentor was this guy who has access to mystery knowledge, who I believe, in order to get me to remote view, put intriguing possibilities in front of me and let me discover for myself. And one of the things he told me a year and a half ago, he said, Dick, the world is, financial system is going to cryptocurrencies. That was decided decades ago. They plan everything many, many years in advance. They know where the world is going. They guide it. They control it. They've decided that the current financial system has had its run. It's going to be segged into digital cryptocurrencies. He said, Dick, get some of those and you'll be well off. He told me, people with your skill, and you've demonstrated the skill, have always been taken care of. And the way you can be taken care of, if you don't want to work for people, get cryptos. And so I did. And I think, so let me sum this up by saying, my remote viewing teacher never had us believe anything. He had us know things by personal experience. He gave us that one, the demonstration of the Matthew Brady target as an experiment. If I remote viewed for you every day, all day, and did a hit after hit, you would probably believe, but you wouldn't be sure, you wouldn't know. If I trained you how to do it, you would know. So there's a difference between knowledge and belief. So my remote viewing teacher, and this was back in the days before the internet, he never showed us any remote viewing. He never made any claims. He never told us to believe anything. He said, here's what you do. Close your eyes, do this, write this, do this, and do this a certain way. Here's the target. Did you see it? Did you only able to do that by displacing your awareness, by exhibiting remote viewing? So we had a knowledge-based skill, a skill and an understanding based on knowledge. Same thing that's happening with me with cryptocurrencies is I've been given some information. And the important, okay, if you don't, do you know about cryptocurrencies?
Very little, very little.
Okay, let me tell you something. This is not a Ponzi scheme. This is not, well, part of it can be a Ponzi scheme. There are crooks in every endeavor. But the underlying basics of Bitcoin and cryptocurrency, it's not a Ponzi scheme. It's not multi-level marketing. I'm not trying to sign you up. I'm not trying to get people to come buy my coin so it will enrich me. The world is going to go to a digital identity system that's on a blockchain. You are going to not be using cash 5 years from now. You're going to be using a smartphone with a digital currency. You'll pay for things. Everything you do will be tracked. Everything, every aspect of your life is going to be tokenized. And I could talk for hours on that. And that's what we're using remote viewing to explore, what's going to be happening with that.
Now, that being said,
the look on your face where you
the question I have,
like, oh my God, I think, am I ready for this?
Well, that brings me to, do you see a massive financial collapse? Do you see the dollar crashing or something like that to ensure that this will be our future?
The fiat system cannot continue. It is modern art. It's an illusion. It's a dead system kept alive by bubble gum, chewing gum, and baleen wire, and just illusion, making zeros and putting more zeros in the system. It's got to go. It's just a matter of how sudden and how catastrophic the switchover is going to be. I believe that the people who guide this planet, and I think I know who that is. I won't tell you right now. Maybe another conversation, we'll get to that. But they want it to be seamless. They're going to have a new system. The new system is going to be no nation states, no borders, no sovereign currencies. It's going to be everything on the blockchain, everything digitalized, recorded, and it's going to be a whole new world. So they want to do that as smoothly as possible. I think they want to bring cryptos in, and they're having people like me do YouTube videos to inform people, to get the knowledge there and get people to accept it so it won't be as difficult. But it is coming. Difficult or not, it is coming. I think there will be I just did a YouTube video on that. If people go to Crypto Viewing, they can see my last discussion of this. I think it'll be a day when the stock market will crash suddenly. They'll say there's a bank holiday. There will be some hyperinflation, and people will be like, oh my God. And they'll come on the airwaves and they'll say, relax. Your Social Security is still going to come. Your pension is still going to be paid. We're going to pay you in a cryptocurrency. Come down, sign up, give us your thumbprint, your bio-authentication. We'll show you how to do it on your smartphone. It will be put in your bank account. You'll be using that, and it'll switch over. So your money that you thought you lost, that's gone away, but we're going to replace it with this cryptocurrency called Stellar and called Ripple. And so that's how that might happen. I'm not sure. I don't know. I'm speculating. Let me say, I don't give investment advice, so do your own research. Don't believe anything I say.
Right. Now, as a final question, do you see any danger with the future of AI and being integrated, you know, with the blockchain technology and everything?
Well, you'd have to define danger. How would danger to what? Danger to who? Danger to
You hear like Elon Musk talking about the dangers of AI in general. And I know blockchain is a form of learning technology. Do you see any type of, you know, negative impacts on society with that being integrated?
Well, what's a negative impact? So where society is going is where the people who run the world want it to go. So you don't have a choice. You don't have a vote. I know I get a lot of grief from the Patriot community when I say this. So it's going to be different. It will be uncomfortable for some people, but they're bringing up a new generation, younger people. I call them Generation Global. They're being taught to accept this, that you will have AI that will track everything you do. They have no privacy. They have no desire for privacy. They don't believe in free speech anymore.
It's basically what I'm getting to.
Accept it. So for you and I, especially for someone my age, I'm quite a bit older than you. Yes, it will be seen as a negative. Yes, it will be troubling. But for the younger generation, they're just going to move right into it, and it will seem normal to them. So the danger, by danger, would you mean that the system can take over and run your life? Well, that's how it's
been dying. Yeah, it seems like that's already starting to occur. Yeah, that, and just like you said, the impact on the younger generations, you know, the technology has already changed the younger generations, and I just don't see that aspect of it getting any better.
Well, the younger generation will not have to, for example, pay so much for healthcare and wait in line to go see a doctor. They'll have a device that they wear on their wrist that will monitor their blood pressure, their mood, their endocrine levels, their cholesterol, their blood chemistry. And if something is out of the parameters that are wanted, they'll be told, you need to eat this and take this medication, and it'll bring it into line. And they won't need to go to a doctor and wait there and fill out all the paperwork. It will be the AI that will determine that. The AI will... you know, I'm reading a book right now that tells how Amazon's going to start sending you your orders before you order. It knows what the AI algorithms know what you're going to want. At the beginning, they're going to send you a box with like, okay, we think you want these vitamins, this supplement, this, you need, it's time you for a new set of headphones for your smartphone, a cord to plug in this. And we saw you browsing for guitar strings. We put two sets of guitar strings in. If you don't want any of this, here's a box, prepaid, it won't cost you anything, send it back. But the AI will be doing your ordering for you in the future.
You're right. I mean, you know, there are a lot of negative aspects to this, and we could speculate about our future all you want, but there's really not much we can do to prevent the advent of what's, you know, occurring when 90% of the world isn't even noticing what's going on behind the scenes.
Yeah. You know? Well, a great, speaking of blockchain and cryptocurrency, if you go look at a website called ID 2020, this is put out by the United Nations. If you go to ID 2020, you can see the goal is by 2020 is to get a digital ID for everyone in the third world. They say on the website, oh, it's such a shame that so many people around the world don't have a digital identity. It's their birthright. It's something they need. So they want to give a digital identity and a smartphone to everyone to get them into this system of AI and cryptocurrencies so that if you work in a factory in Malaysia, you can go use your smartphone to log in and it will know what machine you're on, how productive you are, what you eat for lunch, how much time you're not at the machine. At the end of the day, it will pay you in a cryptocurrency automatically and the taxes will be taken out. And the whole thing will be on a blockchain with AI supervising it. They won't need administrators to write you a check. You don't get paid every 2 weeks. You don't have to report your taxes. It's all just done for you. And they want the entire world on that. And they'll be providing the technology to the people in the third world. It's coming.
Yes, that is fascinating stuff. And Dick, I want to thank you again so much for joining us tonight. Is there anything you'd like to plug or talk about before you leave? Anything you got interesting going on?
I would say for you and anyone that hasn't taken the time, look into cryptocurrencies, learn about blockchain. Just do some Google searches. What is blockchain? How will blockchain change the world? Because it's going to be a bigger boom than computers and the internet. It's going to change everything. And you had best learn about it because it is coming. And if you get in now, you can live a more comfortable life. Okay, I'll close with this. If I would have told you in 1985, there's a company called Microsoft. Microsoft, what kind of name is that? They make software. Software, what's that? It tells computers what to do. Computers, I know some companies have computers. They do like spreadsheet databases, but I'm never going to want that. No. In a few years, everybody's going to have a computer. They're going to shop on their computers. They're going to communicate. They're going to do videos. They're going to make artwork. They're going to do stock trades all on computers. And this company makes software to tell them what to do. And it's going to be a $1 billion industry. And if you put $100 a month into Microsoft, you'll be rich in 10 years. Same thing with blockchain. It's going to be bigger. It's going to be bigger.
Very good. Very good information.
Change the world.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to have to take a look into that. You know, I've never taken the time, and I've heard some negative things. I've heard some positive things, but it's definitely worth a look. And Dick, I want to thank you again so much for joining us tonight. It was great information. I'm going to have you back on soon.
It's always fun. It's a good conversation, Chris. Nice talking with you.
Be good.
Go look at some of our work. Take care.
I'll do. You have a great night.
All right. Bye-bye.